So Shmuel Beis, Perkei Aleph, plus Gedalet. The Mari over here has many problems with David's behavior. Number one, the first problem he has is that, you know, the obvious and open problem with the story is that Batsheva is an Eish HaSish. She's a married woman. She's married to Uriah Achiti. Now, Chazal do say that she was divorced, as we mentioned last week. So, Mechalek's exactly what kind of get the men give their wives before they go out to war. But the Mari is not happy with that, because he says that's against the Pashtus, that's against the simple understanding of the Psukim.
Even, if she's divorced, even if, but the people who say it was a full divorce,
right?
But when she has a husband fighting, anyway, mm-hmm. and he's going to come back to her and remarry her. The only reason he gave her the divorce because that was the thing. Now, she knows that. Mm-hmm. So how can she allow herself? Say it's not a sin. I mean, but if she allows herself to go to bed with somebody else, she cannot remarry her first husband.
She's still allowed to marry her first husband unless she actually marries somebody else. If she just happens to go into bed with somebody else without marrying him, it's not a problem for her to marry your first husband. Well, it's only an issue once they get married.
That's rape.
No, not even rape. Even if it's done willingly. Even if it's done with consent. If it's not marriage, then there's no problem for her to marry.
So he's saying here he did not marry her.
No, he did not marry her. At this point, definitely not.
Okay.
He did not marry her. They were just intimate. Yeah.
But
to put it bluntly.
I mean, you know, it's hard to be... It's hard to understand.
Yeah, I
now,
hear
we're
you.
We're not talking about a plane... A goyish king.
Right, with right. I agree.
God's in everything else, and if he can fall into such a thing, what about us? What are we?
Of course. You're right. 100% right.
You talk for yourself.
You might talk to yourself. We live here in the United States.
Yeah. Listen, it is very hard to understand. We'll go through it one detail at a time, and we'll see what we can.
With, so
yeah.
Maybe.
Arkady, what were you going to say?
In that time, what is really called marriage? Is it a certificate? What kind of relation is called marriage? Because he make a lot of women is called wife. What makes
a ksuba
to be wife?
A ksuba. Yes.
That means there is always should be certificate that time also.
Yeah.
The Ketubah is not new thing, it's old, no. Old time.
Yeah, they added them too. Yes.
But if you take someone and sleep with them, you're married already.
Well, I'm saying the Gemara does talk about the difference between a wife and a pilegish, a concubine. The difference between a wife and a concubine is a wife has ksuba and kiddushin. A concubine does not have ksuba and kiddushin. So we see that there is such a relationship as a wife, a woman with no ksuba and kiddushin. There is such a thing, a concubine.
So she's not considered married?
No. Well, yeah. They're not married officially, but...
I mean, like Gabadin, she's not married.
Right. At this point. Yeah. Yeah, no, she's definitely not married at this point.
All right, let's go.
So let's go through the issues that.
What's her status as her husband's status before this? Are they Jewish? They're not Jewish. Either one of them, are they?
No, they're Jewish.
Who?
Batsheva?
Batsheva's Jewish.
Batsheva's Jewish, yeah.
Like her husband?
He's Jewish.
Also Jewish,
too.
Yes.
So why is he called Achiti?
Achiti? Could be that was the area where his family lived, but he's definitely considered Jewish. Yeah, it's clear. Okay. Because if he was not Jewish.
That's no problem.
Then, what?
No.
Right, right. But the simple understanding is that he's Jewish, because if he's not Jewish, then there's no issue at all. Gentile, a Gentile man who marries a Jewish woman, the marriage is irrelevant. It's not existent. The Gemara brings down the pasuk v'zarmas susim zarmasam. It's like the sperm of a horse. That's what's.
All right, it says over here he was either. Radak says he was. He converted, and he was a from the Chiddim. Mm-hmm.
His grandfather. Her grandfather.
Or he lived in where the Chiddim lived, in that area. So it's one or the other.
Yeah, that's where he lived. Okay, so that's problem number one that the Ma'ari brings down. We're gonna go through all the issues that the Ma'ari brings down, or all the problems he has with David HaMelech, and we'll see how the Malbim answers them one by one. He addresses every single issue, and he says, this is not a problem, that's not a problem, we'll go through them. So problem number one that the Ma'ari brought down is the obvious the obvious problem that she's an Eish HaSeish. Issue number two that he brings down is that it's very problematic to understand how David tried to get Uriah, we're going to see later on, he tries to bring Uriah back from the war, tries to get Uriah to go home and be intimate with his wife. You have an issue over there, because we know the halacha is that a woman is divorced, you're not allowed to marry her before 3 months are up. Because you have to be mafkin min zer lazer, you have to know who they didn't have DNA testing then back then. You have to know who the son belongs to, who the child belongs to. The only way to know that is to have the 3 months gap. And over here it seems, again we're going to go through it and we'll see, but it seems at first glance that there was not a 3 month gap between David being intimate with Bathsheba and David requesting Uriah to go home and be intimate with his wife. Right. So how could he go ahead?
But at this point, maybe he doesn't know that she's pregnant.
She told him. It says right here, Vatara Isha Vatishlach.
When did she tell him?
She told him right away. We're going to see.
Well, you don't find out right away. If you're
within 2 weeks, you know.
Within a week, couldn't
the Mefarshim say that once she missed her period, she knew right away that she was pregnant, and she sent a message to David saying that
so
she was pregnant.
Just a month. We'll put missed the period. Give it a month.
Right.
All right.
Yeah. Okay. So it was definitely less than 3 months that's required to know
who
the father is. Right? So that's problem number two. Because the issue is that if you don't know who the child belongs to, he might end up marrying his half-sister or half-brother, right?
Yeah, right?
We have to know exactly who the parents are. Problem number three that he brings down, again, we're jumping the gun a little bit, but we're going to go through it, is that David later asks, he sends a message to the battlefield, to the general Yoav, telling him to put Uriah on the front lines and cause him to die. Right? He says what he should have done is, he should have kept Uriah back. Instead of trying to cover it up, he should have really just have Bathsheba give birth in private and give the son up to adoption. And that way, David won't really want to run into trouble and killing someone for no reason. He's causing someone to die just because he wants to marry his wife. Doesn't seem like such a good idea. That's problem number three. Problem number four is that through sending Uriah to the front lines, causing him to die, he ended up risking the lives of other Jews. Other Jews had to go ahead and go out to war with Uriah, and it seems like that other Jews died because of this will of David to kill Uriah.
I mean, that.
Let him keep on going.
Well, no, I'm right away, I can't understand that Dory would do such a thing. To send the guy into the front lines for him to die.
You're right.
We're not talking about a plain person here. We're talking about Hashem, and he believed that he would do that.
You're right. We're going to address every single issue that he brings down. We're gonna answer it.
Right.
I'm first bringing out the problems, and then we'll give the answers. Problem number five is that right after Uriah dies, what does David do? he right away goes ahead and marries Bathsheba, as if he's driven by desire. He can't wait. It doesn't look very well. Doesn't look so good. So according to the Ma'ari, he did tshuva, he repented, he davened, he tried to be mechaper on this avera. But now the Malbim brings down that he addresses each issue one by one. First issue that he addresses is that she's an HSH. And he says, no, as we mentioned before, there's a get krisus that kol yitzel lebechamas beis David. Kosef get krisus leishta, he sends a get to his wife, a divorce. And again, there's a disagreement exactly what kind of divorce it is, but the one who instituted this, Takana, was Achitofel. Achitofel happened to be the grandfather of Bathsheba. So David knew that Bathsheba surely followed the advice of her grandfather, and she got divorced from her husband before he went out to war. So now let's see what happens. So again, Pasuk Daled, let's go over it again. Vayishlach David malachim ve'ekachel. David sends messengers, he brings her over to the palace. V'tova ilav v'yishkav ima. She comes to him, and they are intimate. V'hi miskadesh v'simitum asa. Again, this is a side point, but it seems like with all the problems David is running into, at least one thing he made sure that was not going to be a problem is that she was not a nida. She was in Miskadesh Mitumasa. She went to the mikvah already. Vatashav El Besa. After this whole episode, she goes back home. 2 weeks later, she misses her period. She sends a message to David. Vatara Isha. She gets pregnant. Vatishlach Vatagel David. Vatimer Hora Anoichi. She sends a message to David saying, I am now pregnant. David's got a major problem on his hands. Vatishlach David El Yoav. David sends a message to Yoav, the general. He tells him, "Shlach Elias Uriah Chiti, send me Uriah Chiti, the husband of Bathsheba." Vishlach Yoav is Uriah El David. Now David is trying to cover up his mistake by having Uriah going home, be intimate with his wife. That way, nobody would know that it was his kid. Right? It was really Uriah. Right? So now David knew. So now the second issue the Ma'ari brought was that there was no gap. So that way you can't really know who the child came from. Now, however, David knew clearly that the child came from him, right? Because her husband was out in the battlefield. There's no way she got pregnant from her husband, right? The only way she got pregnant was from him. So he knew the truth, and David's plan was, once the child grows up, David will reveal to him the secret, tell him who he really is, and that way, he's going to know exactly that he's the son of David, and not the son of his father, Uriah. So that way he's going to be able to take care of the second problem the Ma'ari brought down. So let's see what happens. Pasuk Zion continues. Vayova Uriah Elov. Uriah comes back home. He comes to the palace. Vayishlo David lishloim Yoav lishloim Am velishloim Kamalchama. David asks Uriah again. He's trying to cover up. He doesn't want his intentions to be obvious. So he asks Uriah, "Tell me how's it going in the battlefield? How's Yoav doing? How are the men doing?" So he's trying to, you know, make conversation with Uriah. Vayomer David l'Uriah. David turns to Uriah and he tells him, "Red leveischa urchatz raglecha." He told him to go home and wash his feet. Now, anytime it says wash his feet, it's really code for being intimate with your wife. So he's really telling him,
he's not his wife now.
Right. Uriah thinks that
he has to marry her first.
Okay, according to one opinion, yes.
But is he going to go back to the battlefield afterwards?
He's going to listen.
Okay, if you go back to the battlefield, then you'll write another get.
And then divorce her right away again?
Yeah. house. Again, these are orders from the king, you know. Again, you're right, it is inconvenient.
We're not talking about a Goyisha king now.
Right, not talking about a Goyisha king.
Okay.
So what does Uriah do? Ve'yetze Uriah min beis ha-melech, ve'teitze acharav mas'as ha-melech. Uriah leaves the palace, and David sends a whole entourage to follow Uriah and bring him home. Now, there's a difference between mas'as and mincha. Mincha just means that he's just sending him some food. Masas actually means that he's inviting him to the palace, giving him the same food that they serve in the palace, and he's bringing the whole entourage with waiters, with the whole menu that David HaMelech himself is going to eat, and he's sending that to the house of Uriah, telling him that he's basically honoring him, a great honor, having him eat the same food that the king himself would eat. So he's sending this whole entourage to the house of Uriah, hoping that Uriah was actually going to go home and be intimate with his wife. And this is one of the issues that the Malbim has with Uriah. See, first of all, if a king gives you a direct order to go home and be intimate with your wife, you have to follow the order of the king. If you do not follow the orders of the king, what are you?
You're a
Mered B'Malchus. You are a rebel, punishable by death. So that's the first mistake he made by not listening to
David.
Second mistake that he made was embarrassing David in public in front of all of the entourage that he sent together with Uriah. He basically tells David that he's not going to follow his orders. But it's not done in private, it's done in front of everybody. After this whole honor that he's honoring him, he's doing it in front of everybody and saying, no, I'm not going to go home.
Alright.
So that's another reason for Uriah to be considered a rebel, and Moirid B'Malchus. And there's a third thing as well. Be'ishkuf Uriah Pesach Beis HaMelech. Uriah lies down right in the entrance to the palace. It's called Avdei Adonav. All the slaves, all the servants that David sent with Uriah remain with Uriah right over there. V'le'arad el Beisach, he did not go home. V'agid el David Leimar, they turn to David and they tell him, Lo'yarad Uriah el Beisach, he did not go home. He did not follow your orders. V'yarad David el Uriah, halimi derech ataba. Madu'a le'arad el Beisach. David turns to Uriah and he says, you are now coming from the battlefield. Why aren't you going home? Now, what David is alluding to is, the halacha is, anytime a person comes home from the derech, from the way, from not being home for a long extended period of time, the halacha is a person has to go home and be intimate with his wife as a sign to show her that he missed her, he appreciates her. So David is alluding to this halacha, telling Uriah, you just came home from a long extended period where you were not in the house. Why aren't you following this halacha of going home and being intimate with your wife? V'yemar Uriah al David. Uriah turns to David and he tells him, Ha'aron v'Yisrael v'Yehuda yeshvim b'sukkos. We have the Aron, and all the Jewish people, and Yehuda, your tribe, David, were sitting in huts. They're sitting in these tents and huts in the battlefield, so uncomfortable. V'adoni Yoyav v'Avdei Adoni al pnei asad nechayinim. My master Yoyav and the slaves of my master are scattered all over the field. I should go home, have a good time, eat a full meal, drink, and be intimate with my wife. I will never do such a thing over my dead body. That's basically what Uriah is telling David. And this is the third mistake that Uriah made that makes him into a Meirat B'Malchus, which is calling Yoav, his master, in front of David. You are not allowed to call somebody else your master in front of the king. You're standing in front of the king. The only master you have is the king. You cannot refer to anybody else as your master. So when Uriah is referring to Yoav, the general, as his master, that is considered to be a rebellion against the king. The Rambam brings down another, a different case where the Isha, who was it? The Isha Tkois, which we're going to see, the Isha Tkois referred to Yoav as Avdecha Yoav. When she speaks to David, she says, Avdecha Yoav, your slave Yoav. She doesn't say Adoni Yoav, my master Yoav. She refers to him as a slave, the slave of David. Because you always refer to the king as your master. And there's nobody else who's your master when you're the presence of a king. So we got three points over here where Uriah is considered to be a rebel against the king, which is punishable by death. So now, let's address the issue that Uriah brings up to David. Uriah tells David, he's referring to the halacha. The halacha is, any time the arayin is not in its place, B'nai Yisrael are asurim b'tashmish. The Jewish people are not allowed to be intimate with their wives when the arayin is not in its place. However, the Malbim points out that Uriah was wrong. That only refers to the real arayin, the arayin which has the luchos sabris inside of it. The arayin that was accompanying the Jewish people in the battlefield was not the real Aaron. It did not have the luchos in it. Rather, all it had was the Urim v'Tumim, the Ephod, and that was it. So, it was not the main Aaron. Therefore, since the king is in his palace, the real Aaron is in its place. There is no such halacha that the Jewish people are not allowed to be intimate with their wives.
Wouldn't the Kodesh Gadol be with the Ephod and the Urim v'Tumim?
Well, there was more than one. I'm saying, yeah, there was more than one. The Kohen Gadol didn't need the one that was in this Aaron all the time. Yeah.
So he just told him that you're relieved from duty, or you're mustered out.
That's what he was trying to tell him.
How many people, even during the Second World War, got out before the war was over?
Yeah, you're right. That's what he was trying to tell him. But Uriah refused to go home while all of his brothers are still fighting. He said, it's not right. How could I go home and enjoy a good life while everybody else is risking their lives out on the battlefield? I'm not prepared to do that. So he was relieved from duty, but he wasn't willing to accept it. So now, David really tries hard. What does he do? Vayomer David el Uriah, Shev v'aseh, why don't you stay here? He says, you know what? When I go back to the battlefield, I'll send you back. Don't worry about it. You'll be able to go back. We're in Shmuel Beis, Perkei Aleph, Pasuk Beis. Shmuel Beis, Perkei Aleph, Pasuk Beis. He tells Uriah, why don't you go home, sleep at home, and tomorrow I'll send you back. He's trying to tell him, don't worry, I will send you back. Just go home tonight. Just one night be home. That's all I'm asking.
Be a good boy.
All right, be a good boy. Go home. Be with your wife. And tomorrow I'll send you back to the battlefield. Uriah stays in Yerushalayim that night and the next day. But he still did not go home. Did not go home yet. David is really desperate. He's grasping at straws. So what does he do? He gets Uriah drunk. Even once he's drunk, he still goes to sleep with the rest of the men, the slaves of David. He refuses to go home at all costs. The next morning, David writes a letter to Yoav, to the general. He gives it to Uriah. What does it say in the letter? Ve'ichtov b'sefer leimar, Havu es Uriah el mulam pnei l'cham ha'chazaka. I want you to appoint Uriah, set him up at the front line. V'shaft ma'acharav v'nikov ha'meis. Once he's in the front line and his life is at risk, order the rest of the soldiers to pull back, leaving Uriah exposed all by himself. I want you to ensure the fact that Uriah will end up dying. So now, this brings us to the third issue that Mari brings up. How could he go ahead and kill someone just because he wants to marry his wife? But as we mentioned before, Uriel is now a rebel. He did three things against the king, and he is now considered a rebel against the king, a mayor of the Malchus, which is punishable by death.
So why didn't he just kill him?
Exactly. It's an obvious question. Why didn't he drag him to the Sanhedrin?
Why is he sending him back into battle? And if he was supposed to, so you have court. He did this.
You're right. Bring him to the Sanhedrin. Have the Edim, the Asra, go through the whole process instead of trying to make it look like it's some kind of accident, sending him back to the battlefield. Well, what's David trying to do over here? So the answer is, the Malbim brings down, is that David knew he's going to end up marrying Bathsheba, and it looks really bad if you kill her husband, and then what do? You marry the wife. It looks really bad. People will find out, the secret will get out, and everyone will rebel against the king. So what he's got to do, he's got to kill him. He's a Merid Malachus, he's a rebel. However, you got to do it in a way where no one will find out the truth. That's what he's doing is he's sending Uriah to the front lines, hoping that he's going to die that way. He's covering it up.
No. You know, if you think that nobody's going to find out what you did, you're making a big mistake. You can't cover it.
Yeah, you're right.
You can't cover up nothing, especially something like this.
You know about it.
You're right. The Gemara says that when David used to give a shir, and a Torah shir, and in the middle of his shir, you'd have someone raise his hand and say, David, I have a question. What's the halacha if someone happens to sleep with an Eish HaSish, with a married woman? Well, what happens to that person? What's he trying to do? He's trying to embarrass David in public, saying, I know exactly what you did. Tell me the halacha. And you know what David would answer? David would say, a person who is intimate with a married woman gets Mises Beistin, he gets killed by the Jewish court of law. However, Yesh Lechelek Le'olam Haba, he has a portion in the world to come. Someone who embarrasses his fellow Jew in public, Ein Lechelek Le'olam Haba, he does not have his portion in this world to come. You're being such a wise guy trying to embarrass me in public, alluding to the fact that I was intimate with an Eish HaSish. I might still have a chelek le'olam haba. You, however, you have no chelek le'olam haba for embarrassing me in public. Okay. So let's see, Viter. So ironically, David is sending the message in the hands of Uriah, telling Yoav to ensure the fact that Uriah will die. Uriah is delivering his own death penalty to Yoav. Pasuk design. Vayibishmar Yoav el Eir. When Yoav comes close to the city, Vayitanes Uriel al Mokoyim Asher Yoda ki Anshe Chayil Sham. The way it would work back in the day, they would have a siege around the city, and every now and then, a small group of soldiers from within the city would go ahead and attack the army that was surrounding the city. So Yoav placed Uriel strategically in the area which he knew that the soldiers will come out and try to attack his men. That's where he places Uriah. Exactly what David asked in the front lines. Now, as Yoav anticipated, the small group of soldiers does come out and fights the Jewish men, the Jewish army. Some Jewish men end up dying, and Uriah Chiti also ends up dying. And now we have to address the fifth issue that Mari has with David. How could he go ahead and cause other Jewish men to die just to cover up the death of Uriah? How are you allowed to do that? So let's go ahead and see exactly what happened. The Malbim points out that what he did was all he did was put him in the front lines. Now, he didn't intentionally appoint people to be in a dangerous place where they did not necessarily need to be. part of engaging in war is being holding the line. And Yoav would have had men in that strategic place anyway. It's not like he put men in danger because David asked him to. These men would have been there regardless. He just happened to put Uriah together with that group that was in danger anyway. So he did not endanger anyone specifically, anyone intentionally, more than what was required anyway. So now, after Uriah dies, when this army attacks them, Yoav sends a message to David. Vayishlach Yoav vayogad David, it's called Divrei Melchama. Yoav sends a message to David and he tells him everything that happened at the war. Vayitzav lamalach lemer. Yoav tells the messenger the following. Kechaleisa, it's called Divrei Melchama, ladaber el ha-melech. When you finish telling him everything that happened, everything that occurred, so now, the way it was set up, the way the war was set up, we're going to have to end with this because it's almost time for Marev, is that you would have the army that was setting siege around the city. They had to make sure to keep a big enough distance from the wall surrounding the city because they had archers. The archers would typically sit on top of the wall, wait for the army that was surrounding the city to come close, to come within their range. The Malbim says their range was a mil. Once they come within their range, what they do is they would go ahead and launch their arrows, shoot down all the soldiers that are surrounding the city, whoever got close enough. So now, what Yoav did, the way he set it up, was that's the first line of defense. First line of defense was the archers that will go ahead and shoot down any soldiers who come within their range. But even if some soldiers manage to get through, they manage to pass through the range of the archers, again, the archers could only shoot to a distance. They can't shoot someone from closer up. So even the soldiers who manage to get closer to the wall itself, you still have the second line of defense, which is, you have people, they don't have to be professionals, they don't have to be archers. All they have to, the Malbim points out, it can even be women. You can have women hold these heavy walks, heavy rocks, heavy boulders. They could drop it on the heads of the soldiers who would approach the wall. That was the way the lines of defense were set up. And now, Yoav assured the fact that Uriah would be killed he would be part of the group who was within the range of the archers, and he's now telling his messenger, if David is upset about the fact that we came within the range of the archers causing some of our men to die, then he's going to deal with it. But we have to stop here. We'll continue this next time. So again, there's not going to be class for the next 2 weeks. We'll resume in 3 weeks after Purim.
This is what you call this story, some explanation about the travel. Is it a classical approach or is it a different opinion?